Well, I hope you are having a fantastic Tuesday. Thanks so very much for joining me, G, on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We have a great show for you today, including, did you know that the average cost for a new mother with insurance to have delivery and labor is more than $4,500. Wow. And this is a new study that's coming out of the University of Michigan. We're going to be talking with one of the doctors behind the study a little later in the show. This is from the 224. I learned with the birth of my son, the cost to deliver a baby through C-section is over $30,000 without insurance. From the 708, perhaps the cost is to compensate for the millions who pay absolutely nothing when they go to the hospital. Medicaid and Medicare reimburse the hospitals and doctors less and less each year. So we're going to find out from one of the doctors behind the study maybe what she thinks is the cause of the rising cost of labor and delivery for new mothers, which is over $4,500. That's a lot of money, especially when you do have insurance. Joining Wintrust Business Lunch now is our very own WGN Radio and ABC News correspondent, Ryan Burrow. Hi, Ryan.
How are you doing, G?
I know that you are covering the coronavirus.
Yes, I'm staying away from it.
Yes, I know.
I'm
nowhere near
it from afar. Yes.
Yes, you are. You are doing your journalistic duties.
Yeah, the numbers keep going up and up, especially in China. 106 deaths now confirmed, 4,500 cases, and that number just continues to go up. I'm sure it's changed considerably even since you know this was last released by the CDC. One of the big issues now is travel. Travel to that area, travel from that area. The United States government has chartered some flights to get diplomats out, as well as some U.S. citizens that may be in, especially in that Wuhan area where the outbreak has taken place. So they're telling people, look, if you don't have to be here, get out. In fact, what we saw yesterday was a request to reconsider travel to China. And now the State Department is saying if it's not essential that you be in China, not just Wuhan, but China in general, they recommend you not go. So that's a big blow right now for airline industries, for hotels. That's a big issue.
And of course, we saw that U.S. stocks, as Orion mentioned, stabilized today after posting the worst loss in months on fears over the coronavirus outbreak. And these travel concerns are on the heels of the travel concerns that were surrounding the Lunar New Year. So this is an all new thing.
Yeah, and what we're seeing in the United States as far as the cases, the suspected cases, the possible cases, a lot of students. A lot of exchange students who are American, who are coming back, who are Chinese, who are going and coming back. So that we just saw two more cases being investigated at Miami, Ohio, and so they're taking a look at that right now. And it's exchange students who are going back and forth that seem to be one of the biggest questions.
And particular regions where the virus started have also been closed off within China, but now these bans are extending globally.
Correct. And a little bit further in China as well, they're warning, because so many people have been moving to and fro over the last several weeks, that there's concern that Wuhan is just not the center and end all be all, but this is starting to spread. I do want to point out, none of the cases in the United States have come from anywhere but China. So these five cases are all people who came back to the United States from China. It's not as though someone came here, coughed on someone, and then someone got it here in the United States. That's not how it's worked so far. But the numbers of countries are starting to add up now. You've got 17 separate countries. Obviously, you've got a lot of international travel, a lot of global business that's being done. So the concerns continue to grow.
Well, thank you to our very own WGN Radio's Ryan Burrow, also with ABC News. Definitely not business as usual. And it will be affecting revenue, as you said, as people aren't allowed to travel freely.
Yeah, but you can't get this, by the way, by opening up a box. So if you order something from China, it arrives. It's not as though a big cloud is going to go up in your face and you'll get sick. And you have to actually physically be in the room with someone. So keep that in mind.
Got it. Okay. Well, thank you, Ryan. This is the Winterest Business Lunch with me, G. Thanks so much for being with us on this gloomy day. We just heard WGN Radio's and ABC News correspondent Ryan Burrow talk about the travel restrictions around the coronavirus and how it's affecting travel and travel industry, flights especially. Joining us now is Philip Braun, who's the clinical professor of finance and associate chair of the finance department at Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern. We're going to be discussing a little bit more about the coronavirus and how it's affecting the stock market. Hi, Philip.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fantastic to have you join us. So you've been saying that basically we didn't need to worry as much as people have been worrying. Why is that?
I think it was an overreaction by the market because they're around uncertainty about the extent of the virus. And we see that today. The market rebounded partially today. So yes, go ahead.
We should have really talked to you yesterday when everything was plummeting.
Yeah, that's right. But it's captured about half its loss yesterday.
So what are some of the factors that you feel go into why other folks are overreacting and why you're saying it's going to correct itself? And do you see any other effects down the road as this spreads?
Well, there is reason to be concerned. If you look at what happened with the SARS epidemic, it made the Chinese economy contract quite a bit. So any companies that are exporting into the Chinese market will potentially feel an effect for this new virus. Furthermore, companies that produce in China might have their production cut back, like Apple, because employees are not going to work.
So how will it affect, in terms of the U.S. markets, which stocks do you feel, or what types of stocks will get affected the most?
With the current tariff issues between the two countries, it's really hard to predict. And because right now, trade between the two countries has slowed down to such an extent. So possibly after more information is known about this current virus, agriculture would be affected, and any company that would be exporting to China.
Talking with clinical professor of finance, Philip Braun, over at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern. As you mentioned, historically, the only comparison that we have is the SARS epidemic that happened in 2003. Do you think that that's a good comparison? Or what do you say to those folks who say, well, you know, a lot has changed in China since 2003. The demographics and the economic dynamics of the country have been changing. But you feel that that is a good comparison in terms of trying to figure out what the stock market might do and the global markets might do.
I think it's fair, but more importantly, it's the only comparison we can make. There is no other example we can look to learn about what might happen for this particular virus outbreak.
Of course, there are people that see the pullbacks and dips in the market as more of an opportunity. I know that you also specialize in emerging markets. Can you talk a little bit about what emerging markets are and what opportunities there might be?
Emerging markets are countries like China, Thailand, Philippines, Brazil, Chile, countries that are still hopefully on a strong growth path, but they're not as wealthy as the U.S. So these emerging market economies are typically very volatile. Their stock markets are typically very volatile, not just because of economic factors, but also because of political factors. So China is really at the tip of the emerging markets because they're growing so quickly, and they'll soon be called a developed economy. But fundamentally, it's countries that don't have as much wealth per capita as the U.S. does.
So is this a great place for investors to look in terms of seeing potential growth, great growth?
China, of course. That's the expectation, right? Once the tariff disputes are settled, after this virus is better understood, then we can expect China to be on a higher growth path again, which is three, four, five times the growth rate that we have here in the U.S.
Do you think there's going to be more dips and pullbacks depending on how many more people are infected, and also how many more people are die from the coronavirus, or how long it's going to be before China gets it under control?
Yeah, that's one of the problems. There's only a limited amount of information coming out of China because it's restricted by the government. My understanding today that the number of cases of infections in China is estimated to have doubled to over 4,000 cases today. So that leaking out of information like that is problematic. For example, the hospitals in Wuhan don't really have the capacity to see all potential patients, so they're not testing all potential patients for the virus. So there's uncertainty of how many people are actually infected with the virus in Wuhan, let alone elsewhere in China.
Speaking of the hospitals and the capacity of the hospitals to deal with this epidemic, based on just sort of your knowledge in terms of global markets, and is China in a good position to address the crisis, do you think?
Beyond what they're doing in terms of restricting movement, I don't think they really are. They just don't have enough doctors, enough hospital to be able to handle all the patients in Wuhan. And if it grows outside of Wuhan, it could be much more dramatic problems because of their poor medical system.
What do you think in terms of, critics who are more concerned in terms of the global markets, and especially with how much larger the economy is now? Do you think the spread of this and how large it could get could affect China's GDP?
U.S. GDP or just any other country's GDP?
I just mean also in terms of the China's consumer market as well.
Yeah, if there's a pullback in China's consumer market, it definitely can affect other global economies like the U.S. and the Euro countries. But China does import some products, so it could have a global effect for sure.
So what were you saying to folks who are listening right now or worried about the markets and looking at their checking on their 401k balances? What do you say to them in order to ease fears?
Look away. leave your 401k account alone. It's a very temporary blip in the market. The best strategy for a 401k account is to leave it alone almost all the time. Those investors who change their investments in their 401k accounts due to short-term economic events typically have a lower return than those who leave their money alone.
Is this also a time when you're looking at pharmaceutical stocks and seeing which companies are getting tapped in terms of potential treatments for the coronavirus as well?
It's possible. At this point, no one knows how to manage the symptoms of this particular virus. But Eluvia, the drug produced by AbbVie, they donated that drug to date. The Chinese Minister of Health says that's the recommended treatment for this particular virus, but there's no evidence that it's going to have an effect on this particular virus.
So Philip Braun, he's a clinical professor of finance and associate chair of the finance department at the Kellogg School of Management over at Northwestern. You're saying remain calm, don't overreact. We're going to see what happens. Also, wanted to ask you before I let you go about the Federal Open Market Committee is concluding its two-day meeting tomorrow, and it's not expected to move on rates, but of course the president did say that they should cut interest rates so that the U.S. can pay down its $23 trillion debt. Kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that before we let you go.
I would be shocked if the Fed lowered interest rates again after this meeting. In my opinion, they're already too low. The economy is doing extremely well. So there doesn't seem to be any need for lower interest rates. It's potentially, if they lower interest rates, you could generate inflation. So I'd be absolutely shocked if they decrease them more. The president, of course, cares about rapid economic growth coming up to the election. That's what would occur if they lower interest rates more. But over the long term, it's not the best thing for the U.S. economy.
And what do you think in terms of consumer confidence? New numbers say that consumer confidence has jumped as the job market even looks better. The Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index rose to 131.6 this month from 126.5 in December.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we see consumer confidence has been strong for quite a while. Unfortunately, if you study the relationship between consumer confidence and growth in the stock market, there's actually a low relationship between the two. So it's a great indicator that consumer confidence is rising. It's actually not the greatest predictor about what's going to happen with the stock market or with GDP.
Well, thank you so much, Philip. Really appreciate you being with us. This was Philip Braun. He is with the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern. He is the associate chair of the finance department and a clinical professor of finance. Thanks so much, Philip.
Yeah, thank you.
Really
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Okay, time now for a quick break. We'll be right back on WGN Radio. This is a Wintrust Business Lunch with G. We've been talking about since the top of the show the high cost of having a baby in America. And this is with insurance, more than $4,500 for labor and delivery on average. Once again, the shocking part of this is with insurance. And joining us now is Michelle Moniz. She's a doctor and from the University of Michigan is where this study came from. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for being with us. This is a pretty shocking number. How did you feel when you discovered what the average cost was?
We were surprised. This was staggering. I could not believe the sheer magnitude of the expenses. $4,500 is not an amount of money that I think many folks have just waiting around in case of a healthcare cost. So we were a little bit disheartened by these findings.
And this is an area of, this is an occupation you're very familiar with because you're an OBGYN. So you deliver babies.
That's right.
And
that's right. And go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask you to talk a little bit more about the study, sort of how many over the course of how much time and how many women you guys included in the study.
Sure. So we looked at a sample of women who, as you mentioned, have health insurance. These are women who have health care coverage through their job. So these are the Cadillac health insurance plans that we think of as providing really great coverage. And we looked at women from 2008 through 2015. So that was the most recent year for which we had data available. And we found, as you were describing, that out-of-pocket costs, what people were paying above and beyond their insurance, rose from about $3,000 to about $4,500 by the end of the study period.
And what do you think accounts for that rise in costs?
Well, there were two really important things that we found. One was that the standardized cost, so it's a kind of the average cost for maternity care, didn't really change much over this period. But over time, women were paying a higher proportion of those costs. So women started out paying about 12% of those costs at the beginning of the study period, and that rose to about 20% of costs over time. So part of what we're seeing is that women are shouldering a higher burden of the overall cost for care. The second important thing that we found was it's the deductibles, that this rise in out-of-pocket costs really mirrors the trend in rising deductible payments that folks were shelling out for. And so this is something we've seen in other areas in healthcare as well, where we are starting to see more folks in high-deductible health plans, and those folks are paying higher out-of-pocket for some of the healthcare services we think are really essential for people, including, as this study adds, maternity care.
So the percentage of childbearing women, their deductibles rose over the course of these years.
Right. So more women had deductible payments over the study period, and those payments overall and the overall amount, the magnitude of cost went up over time for those who had deductible payments. And that was really driving a lot of what we were seeing in those rising costs. And so I think that's a key take-home message for folks, is to be really wary about those deductibles. A deductible is an amount of money that you are on the hook for before your health insurance coverage kicks in for most healthcare services, including maternity services. So you'll have to pay that deductible, whether it's $2,000 or $5,000 or $10,000, before your health insurance coverage really kicks in. And this is tricky for maternity care because about 45% of pregnancies in the United States are unintended. And that makes it really difficult for folks to plan and save for a healthcare expense like this.
Well, there are a lot of women that aren't expecting to get pregnant, and then they get the happy news that they are. But that also means, as you said, that they probably didn't pick the right type of health insurance plan at the beginning of the year when they had to sign up for insurance.
Right. So this is, I think, something to just be really, really cautious about when, if you have choices in the healthcare options for, in terms of plans that are available to you, to really read the fine print and understand what your responsibilities will be. And I think we have some work on the policy side to try to make health insurance plans safer for moms and babies and families. We certainly want everybody to get evidence-based maternity health care. So screening tests and health insurance services that can help make moms and babies healthier, we certainly don't want a financial burden to prevent somebody from getting that type of care. And we know from a large body of evidence, and I also see this anecdotally with patients, that sometimes when people face a high out-of-pocket cost, they delay care or they choose not to get a service at all. And we certainly don't want to see that happening with maternity services.
We're talking with Michelle Moniz. She's out of the University of Michigan. She is a doctor there, including one of the lead authors of the study that is saying that on average, a new mother in the U.S. will pay around $4,500 for labor and delivery, and that is with insurance. Michelle, can we talk a little bit about what sort of this study included in terms of the costs? Are you talking about prenatal care? Are you talking about any postpartum care? What sort of costs are we talking about?
So we define maternity services as any healthcare services that was utilized in the 12 months before childbirth, the childbirth hospitalization and all of those associated services, and then service use in the first 3 months postpartum. And the goal was to include all services that might influence maternity care. So, for example, for a patient who has diabetes or high blood pressure, she might see her internist or her endocrinologist to try to optimize that chronic condition before getting pregnant. And we wanted to make sure that the cost of that service was included in addition to things like prenatal care or an ultrasound during pregnancy, because all of those things help make sure that moms and babies have a healthy, safe outcome.
Childbirth is the number one reason for hospitalization for most women in the United States. And there's also another shocking statistic that we have pretty high maternal mortality rates, right, related to pregnancy and child delivery?
Absolutely. So the maternal mortality rate in the United States has nearly doubled over the past three decades. And this is at a time when our peer high-income countries have seen their maternal mortality rates fall. So I think that's the most staggering part of this whole story, is that the return on investment isn't there. We're not getting a lot of bang for our buck, and people are paying a lot out of pocket for these services, and we need to make sure that we are delivering better outcomes for folks.
And you do believe that perhaps the increase in the mortality rate has to do with maybe folks delaying care, as you mentioned before?
Well, I think the maternal mortality rate is driven by many things. It's multifactorial. Challenges with accessing care, including access barriers that are posed by financial costs, like the ones we observed in the study, those are certainly a contributing factor. I think, when we think about out-of-pocket costs for healthcare, one of the conceptual motivations for those types of costs is so folks have skin in the game. We want to discourage people from using clinical services they're not going to benefit from. And maternity care just really doesn't fit this model. We know that baby's going to be delivered somewhere. And so we want to make sure that people have good coverage for these types of services.
So, Michelle, since you've highlighted these issues, what do you think we can do to solve this issue and help bring down the costs once again and make access more easy for expecting mothers?
I would love to see state and federal policies that eliminate or significantly reduce out-of-pocket costs for maternity care. These are essential health services for families, and we want to make sure that every baby gets off to the best start in life. We have to remember that these really high costs we saw in this study, $4,500 for maternity care out-of-pocket after insurance, these costs are coming for workers at a time when they're already spending money on a crib and a car seat, and these are employed individuals. They may be going back to work after pregnancy, and so they're probably thinking about child care expenses, and we would hate to have financial burdens preventing people from accessing healthcare services that improve outcomes for moms and babies.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle. Where can we go to read this study?
The study was published in Health Affairs, and it's available online. You can, if you Google Health Affairs and maternity costs, you'll see it pop up.
Well, thank you so much to Dr. Michelle Moniz. She is of the University of Michigan and also one of the lead authors of this study. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you. What a pleasure.
A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. Wintrust Business Lunch, G here. We're about to wrap up the show soon, but not before we talk with WGN Radio's Amy Guth.
Hello.
Hi, Amy.
Hello. How are you?
Fantastic. So I know that there was one story that caught both of our eyes about McDonald's.
We're starting with McDonald's.
I wanted to start with McDonald's.
Well, I mean, here's an interesting thing, right? Because we saw the chicken wars, the chicken sandwich
Popeyes.
Wars this summer, where people were literally camping out for a chicken sandwich. Posting to social media, it was such a thing. And then a lot of people were like, okay, McDonald's, your move. What's happening? So they've made their move, but they're doing so with chicken breakfast sandwiches, which I think is an interesting one. They're like, okay, we'll see you and raise you a breakfast sandwich. But a lot of eyes are on McDonald's right now. I think a lot of people are kind of waiting to see what their plan is to get into the plant-based meat patty game, right? They did a test of that at some Canadian stores. But I think what's happening is you've got 14,000 stores in North America. That's a lot. So that's a big ask of a supplier. So I think that's kind of what the holdup is for McDonald's, but we'll see there. But that's one step for them. Today, the chicken sandwich is available for breakfast.
Just in case you're interested, it's the chicken McGriddles and the McChicken biscuit, just for a limited time. So we'll
they
see.
They say that. People are going to be going crazy for it, and then
like
they're going to
the
keep
McRib,
it.
Amy. It could, they could really
the
pull
McRib.
This thing, and then, you know, have
then
to
it's
wait.
A thing, yeah. Then it's totally a thing. Or the, what's the green, the shamrock shake, right?
Yeah.
Thing that people just kind of like wait for all year. Right. It could be like that. You never know.
Well,
you never
get
know.
It while you can.
Yeah, I guess so. Let's get our chicken sandwich on, friends. Okay, shifting, though, another story that I'm watching today that I think is really interesting. UIC has received a grant from a foundation that is backed by Melinda Gates. They're saying they have not disclosed what the number is, only that it is one of the largest gifts that the school has received. There's some interesting numbers swirling around this one. I think it's really interesting because this grant is all about getting more women in the tech field. And in talking with the head of UIC's computer science department, this really interesting number emerged. And that was, his quote was, today, women represent less than 20% of computer science graduates nationally. But 35 years ago, more than one third of graduates were women. So we're actually, even though we're seeing more women in the workforce and more women going to and graduating from college, fewer are entering and remaining in the computer field in particular.
So these would be the STEM subjects, but I feel as though we have been seeing a big push of making sure that women are headed or know that STEM is STEM jobs.
Is available.
And, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of conversation around that, and there's a lot of experts that I've talked to on this topic, and there's kind of this idea that there are certain points that are so critical. One of them is we do a good job of getting girls interested in STEM fields, and then we kind of leave them there. And so maybe there should be some culture change. Like once you get in the workforce, there's a big drop off because suddenly it's like, well, I had all this support in school. now what? It's very different. It's still maybe kind of a boys club or something like that. So we see a huge drop off shortly after entering tech fields. Also, there's a little bit of a drop off upon entering college. So there's these interesting kind of critical junctions that I think people are trying to target.
That's fascinating. So it's about having that foundational and systemic support also within the workplace.
That's right. And so this foundation, you know, one thing they're going to be working on is helping with internships. Like that alone, once you're there, you can kind of get a sense of the culture. Is this place right for me? But also, you don't get a shot at something if you haven't been in the door, right? So an internship is off. A lot of people get hired from internships. So that's one thing they're going to be doing. But they're also looking to make a new computer science building at UIC. So this is a very, I mean, it sounds like a very large number. It sounds like they're going to do a lot of good with it.
There's another story that you're also watching.
Well, there's many, to be
yes,
fair.
Yes, but one that I think we were supposed to talk about yesterday and we didn't get to.
Yeah, so this story kind of made me chuckle a little bit, and that is yesterday, the Pullman area alderman, Anthony Beal of the 9th Ward, kind of came out of the gate going like, hey, Pullman is getting this Amazon distribution center. They've made a deal in kind, kind of a, you know, a handshake agreement. It's happening. We're good. And then a few hours later, Mayor Lightfoot is like, hi, slow your roll. That is not what happened.
Is that what she said?
She said her actual word was that he got ahead of himself.
Okay.
And she says there is nothing to talk about yet. Amazon would not confirm specific plans, but they did say, you know, we're always looking for new locations, weighing a lot of factors, how to best serve customers, but we do not provide information on our future roadmap. So they put out a statement pretty quickly. It does sound like perhaps the alderman got a little excited and got it over his skis, maybe, but who knows how that's going to go. They confirmed that they were looking. It is one spot they are considering, but there's like, we're not going to talk about that too much.
I'm sure it's an announcement that he's really wanting to make.
Oh, sure. I mean, he even said that he felt so confident about this happening that he was willing to forego the possibility of luring a Chicago casino to the location, which a lot of people had talked about is a really strong possibility. And he said, hey, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. And I mean, he's like, I'm running with this one. I'm going here. It was just kind of a funny little comedy of errors on the backdrop of here's this huge company that we've seen kind of double down in suburbs and Joliet and Wheeling and Aurora, not quite in city proper other than a small warehouse in Goose Island, edging in kind of. And meanwhile, a very human thing happened of kind of maybe a misstep and maybe a not so fast and kind of all this. So I thought it was kind of an
I would love to know what was said on a phone call.
I can imagine.
Behind a closed door.
You know,
door.
He looked at his phone and was like, oh, Lightfoot's calling me.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. And, you know, some have speculated the two of them have had not necessarily a contentious relationship, but there's been a little bit back and forth of them with them since she was elected. So, you know, we'll see how that shakes out.
Well, WGN Radio's Amy Guth, thank you so much, Amy, for talking about trending business stories with us.
Thanks
so much. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.